guys, I'm part of an alcoholic. So, essentially what I'm going to be talking about tonight to finish up my 3-week period. Again, Mark, thank you for having me out to speak. Always an honor and a privilege. Good to see you too, just in general. In the first week I was here, I talked about my experience with my first big book sponsor, and I was talking a lot about my experiences with coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and my preconceived notions. But something I talked about a little bit in particular is how my sponsor used to talk about this idea of life just being a continuous, endless spree of cycles. You know, a lot like how life almost being compared to like the four seasons. You know, there'll be good times, there'll be bad times, come and go. In particular, at that point in my recovery, and when I was working with him, he was talking about this idea of, like, you know, the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, particularly what was written in this book. You know, what's referred to in the fifth tradition of AA's message, which is the directions outlined in the first 164 pages of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and our ability to carry that message to the still suffering alcoholic. And by the time he got sober in the 90s, the message the fellowship was named after became very unpopular. You know, even when I got sober, like the meetings I was going to in the towns I got sober in, I was being told to wait a year before starting my first step. You know, it's crazy. Like, I was at my sponsor home group last night with a couple of sponsees, and I was bitching about one of my sponsees who's like 8 months sober, and he's struggling to do anything really in the fellowship, and he's on his eighth step, and I'm talking about, like, getting him to get more sponsees, and I kind of looked at him and was like, you know what's crazy? I take so for granted, like, this conversation I'm having right now. Like, I know when I talk to him, my sponsor, I know we're on the same page. We got sober with the same people. We've always been doing the same things. He's been sober for 13 years now. But, like, where I'm coming from and where I got sober, even in my home group currently, you know, to talk about having a sponsee with less than a year of sobriety, having other sponsees working with people. You know, I've gone through the 12 steps within their first 6 months of sobriety and being pushed to sponsor people with such a far-fetched idea, you know, like, in general. And it's just something I take for granted, you know, and a lot of the people I got sober with people who were sober long enough to have known people like Bill Wilson, to have known people like Clarence Snyder, who knew the first 100 that managed to stay sober and stay alive, really, long enough to share about their experiences with, like, what it was like back in the, like, getting sober in the 40s and 50s, you know. And both, in a dual-edged sword, it was, like, the best of times and it was the worst of times, because Bill Wilson refers to that period of Alcoholics Anonymous as the flying blind period, but at the same time, what they did to preserve unity with the fellowship really worked. Because, like, back in the 1940s, like, in every major city, there was really only one Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. In the 1940s, there was, like, the South Orange group. There may have been a group in Montclair. You had Hank Parkhurst, who was working in his building in Newark, writing the big book. But there really wasn't a whole lot of Alcoholics Anonymous in general. Maybe the Morristown meeting had just started at that point, but maybe, like, two or three meetings in the entire state. So, like, you know, they would conjugate at that members' houses, but to even be welcomed into the meeting itself, you had to have been sponsored by somebody. You not only had to have been sponsored by somebody, you had to say a third step prayer with a group of members of Alcoholics Anonymous before you were even welcomed to the meeting, like, in general, to be able to share. You know, it even talks about with working with others and the vision for you that, like, they would have these meetings for newcomers. I have a place to conjugate to talk about, like, you know, newcomer stuff and to get guidance from the people who have been sober long enough. Can't really call them old timers because I have more time I have more sobriety time now than they did back in the 40s when they were taking people through the work and doing what they were doing. But like those are the lengths they were willing to go to preserve unity on, like, on one hand, like, in the sense of anonymity, because back in the 1930s and 40s and 50s, there was such a stigmatism towards being alcoholic. Like, they had to go to those lengths to preserve unity within the groups that were being started back then to be able to grow. But on the other hand, back in the 1930s and 40s and 50s, it was also, again, what Bill Wilson referred to as the flying blind period. It was the period before Alcoholics Anonymous adopted the 12 traditions, and let alone the 12 concepts. And what was happening back then, you know, 1930s, 1940s was a different time. There was Jim Crow laws. There was, you know, very, very hush-hush with anything LGBTQ back then. You know, there was a lot of people selling memberships. You become sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, there was a lot of crazy stuff that was going on back then because there were really no, there was no laws in Alcoholics Anonymous to tell people what to do or not to do. But really what Bill Wilson adopted was a set of principles for groups to abide by, to how the steps are meant for the individual member, the traditions were meant for the AA group. And, you know, what I find to be the most effective way of working my program as outlined in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, not only is applying these principles and these directions that are outlined in the first 164 pages, but also applying the other 24 principles they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, the traditions and the concepts, and the concepts being the 12 principles of Alcoholics Anonymous that are meant for the overall service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous on how A should really be ran as a nonprofit organization. You know, and what's that really looked like for me is I've always been part of a home group that has been a pivoting point where I do all my 12-step work. You know, my sponsees know where my home group is. My sponsees come to my home group. My sponsees are a part of the home group. My sponsees are involved in the home group. I take positions in the home group. My sponsees take positions in the home group. My sponsees sponsor people in my home group. They get their sponsees to get involved in the home group. And so much of the art of what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is really can just be simply described as monkey see, monkey do. You know, as much as following the directions in the big book and applying them to my life is important to work in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, what I come to find being like the art of sponsorship can really be summed up in my ability and willingness to follow a blind direction for my sponsor and ask the simple question, what's next? And if I don't care if you're from Park Ave, Park Bench, how high or low bottom alcoholic you are, when I get a sponsee that's on that same plane as me of just being willing to follow direction, we're golden. And I know by that point, it's going to be clear cut moving forward on what we're going to do when working this program. And if you know, and if I get any other answer, there's really nothing to work with now. You know, I don't care if your life's too busy because you got a family, kids, because you're super busy, because the state's on your butt, because you're probably going to face indictments and all that stuff. Like, I've seen it all. I've heard it all. I've sponsored plenty of guys who have been through it all. I've been through all the stuff myself. And the fact of the matter is that so much of what I experience in my life, I can see symmetry in the outer external physical realm that I live in to the internal spiritual realm that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. So again, I'm trying to rotate back into that talk of what I was talking about with like the seasons and life being cycles. I got to speak at this group when I was talking to one of the founders of this group about starting a meeting over in a different part of the state, and he was given a lot of guidance and like direction on formats and stuff like that. We wanted to do something different. We wanted to do a speaker meeting for a different fellowship. And we kind of ran with it. But the symmetry between the aspects of my life that were where I was stuck when I was a year and a half sober, to the aspects of my life where I'm stuck now at 7 years sober, is almost like crazy. It's very impeccable. It's very odd. But if I was to describe this process in one simple phrase that Chris S. used to speak here all the time, used to talk about, what I really coined it from this guy who used to be sponsored by Ron B., but his sponsee, Ian L., we used to be really close with Chris S., used to say this all the time, and I adopted this in my first year of sobriety, and it's been relevant in my life since. But if I was to describe this process, it really comes down to just faith is a result of results. Like, I was just at an AA meeting, and somebody described faith as being this process of, like, belief is the idea of standing on an edge of a cliff and somebody telling you that if you jump off this cliff, your life's going to be totally better. And faith is the process of like falling, and that process of jumping off the cliff, knowing you're going to be okay. But that's not true. That's not actually faith. Faith is a result of results. Actually having faith in that circumstance would be going on top of the cliff, jumping off, then getting back on top of that cliff to jump off again, knowing that you jumped off the first time and everything was going to be okay. And really what I've discovered from getting sober in Alcoholics Anonymous is that, simply put, the 12 steps as outlined in this book are all exercises in faith to develop a relationship of that God of my understanding, to where when life actually shows up in my life, you know, when the girlfriend's cheated on me, when I end up getting kicked out of the living situation that I'm in because of financial troubles, when whatever, when somebody dies, when a best friend of mine dies, when life actually shows up in sobriety, I'm able to turn to these directions and principles and this relationship I've developed with this God of my understanding to be able to apply it to my life and be able to grow from that. And now I'm in a weird place now, sitting here now being in this meeting for the second time, like 6 years later, to where when I first came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was very agnostic to this process. I was very ignorant to the directions given here, and I was very skeptical, like, if any of this was going to actually come true in my life. But as a result of good sponsorship, strong home group etiquette, a loving God, you know, I'm 6 years removed from that, having had an awakening as a result of these steps, knowing if I take any of these actions as outlined in this book, I will get the promised result every single time. Even something like the 10-step promises that talks about being placed in a place of neutrality, safe and protected, where the thought of alcohol and the thought of drink would be removed. You know, when I first sat down with my big book sponsor, he promised me that between at some point of starting my 4-step and finishing all my amends on my 8-step and finishing my 9-step, I was going to have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And at some point, I was going to have an experience great enough to where the thought of the obsession to drink and drug would be removed. And that's exactly what happened. When I first went through the work with that sponsor, I got an 8-step list full of like 50, 100, you know, people I need to make amends to, you know, and I was told to go find these people. Like, my sponsor literally was sponsoring a private investigator in Alcoholics Anonymous and gave me the direction to go find everybody, and I did, you know, and I was able to make those amends, and I was able to go through that process making all those amends and have that experience to where for around 3 or 4 years now, I haven't had that problem with alcohol or drugs whatsoever, with that obsession being removed. And With that said, let's talk about this idea of sponsorship, right? Because, like, again, this whole thing is this process, and this whole thing is this journey that's going to be very personal to each and every one of us that's in this room. What my four steps going to look like, what's going to be talked about on the fifth step, with what my sponsor's even going to say on that fifth step, what's going to come to him in the moment, what's going to be in my A step, what amends I'm going to make, the sort of message I'm going to talk to when I talk to newcomers, and what sponsees I pick up over time is going to look totally different from my experience from each and every individual that comes into Alcoholics Anonymous. I've talked about this idea that we're all uniquely qualified to help each and every one of us out there. You know, and something that the Raymer brothers used to say out in Austin, Texas, or Kerrville, Texas, all the time. Something got really stuck to me about something Chris said is that we don't need another Pat O'Keefe. Like, we need like another newcomer. You know, we need the next generation of Alcoholics Anonymous to step in line and to step up to the plate. You know, and be willing to get into the trenches and get to the firing lines to continue this carry this message to the still suffering alcoholic, whether it be just in the basic AA meeting and just, you know, showing up to the basic weekly discussion meeting that happens like once a week in Westfield, New Jersey, or like going in the fire lines to the treatment centers or the streets and carrying this message to wet drunks. You know, something that I was told when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous all the time because of my age is that I am the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today I can honestly tell you that is not true. I am not the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and as a result of these steps I'm able to carry this message to still suffering alcoholic. I've already been, I had an experience. I've been here. The future of Alcoholics Anonymous is getting lit up right down the street right now. The future of Alcoholics Anonymous isn't even born yet. You know, my job and responsibility today as a sober member of AA to keep these doors open long enough and to be talking about this message long enough for that newcomer to come in to get involved, get busy, have an experience to where they can go back and do that for other people. You know, and that, there's a lot of ways that can look for the individual alcoholic. You know, we all have our unique strengths and abilities that make us uniquely qualified to carry this message to particular individuals. You know, so I'm going to begin reading on page 89, chapter 7, Working with Others. So it talks about practical experience shows nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is the 12th suggestion. Carry the message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see fellowship grow up around about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know that you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. So, you know, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it wasn't very clear to me what it meant to be a sponsor. There was no clear-cut definition that was described to me. I didn't know you were supposed to have gone through the steps to actually sponsor people. That church wasn't what I saw in the meetings I was going to in Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of the people I met who were sponsoring people had not, were using like the Big Book more as a paperweight or like something to hold up their bed, you know. And it was like open bashing about it too. Like that was what I was seeing. In fact, not to get a little morbid, but in my first six months of sobriety, I had been through the steps. I was sponsoring people, but I came in with this kid who was lived the town over from me, and his name was Rob. And Rob was a chronic alcoholic, drug addict. And he got in a sponsor that told him to wait a year before starting the step work. It turned out that that particular sponsor had never actually done a fifth step outlined in the big book and had never gone past the fifth step out of the 12 steps, but he picked him up as a sponsor anyway. I remember having a conversation with him when I was in early sobriety, and I told him, dude, I talked about powerlessness, I talked about unmanageability, and I talked about my experience of finally getting into the work and how things started to change, and I just told him that's probably not a good idea for somebody like us to just white knuckle it for a period of time. But he carried on his way, and he worked in a restaurant. He worked in a winery, I think. And one day he was they were forcing everybody to sample the wines, and he ended up getting drunk, and he ended up going on a run, and it turned out he relapsed, and he got in a car accident. And he was out for a while. When he was 9 months sober, he didn't even make it to a year. And I remember I must have been almost a year sober. And I got a call at like 2 a.m. one night, and it was from Rob. And Rob was just trashed. But he was talking to me. He was like, dude, I can't stop drinking and drugging. It's like, I keep trying to stop. I keep trying to go to detox, but nothing's working. But I called my sponsor, and he told me to wait another year before starting the step work again. Can you get me into this process? Can you get me into that work? And I'm like, you know, yeah, absolutely. Let's meet up in the morning. Let me call you in the morning when I wake up more. And let's get into the work. And what ended up happening is that I went to bed that night, and that kid, Rob, ended up overdosing that night, and he ended up dying. My parents found him dead in his bed. And I remember finding out at the AA meeting the next day, the Summit 530, and his sponsor was there. And his sponsor was like, only if he wanted it enough, man. He just never wanted it enough. You know? Which is just like, like, when I come in Alcoholics Anonymous, like, I'm told not to drink and go to meetings. And that's fair, you know, to, like, the person that works for it. But, like, me being the chronic low-bottom alcoholic, that's just Nancy Reagan coming up to me and just telling me to say no. You know, then for, like, I'm going to just be able to stop is inferring power, choice, and control. I'm an alcoholic. I lack that. That's pretty much everything I went over the first week that I was here. You know? And I lack the ability to just stop left to my own devices. And honestly, like, my first experience with sponsorship was just the sort of altruism that they talk about in the beginning of this book. I had a sponsor that I couldn't even call my sponsor originally. The dude just came up to me and asked me how I was doing every day. You know, I was going to drunk to meetings. I was out of control. People were avoiding me because they were scared to catch a relapse. But this guy would just come up to me every single day and ask me how I was doing. And, like, people had told me to get a sponsor. Like, again, I didn't know what qualified somebody to be a sponsor. But so I would go to AA meetings. I would, like, see old-timers share confidently at AA meetings. I would go up to one of them. I would ask for help. And for them to be my sponsor, then I would never go back to that AA meeting ever again. You know? Because that's just like the way I was. Like, you telling a newcomer to find a sponsor is a lot like telling a toddler to go find his parents. Right? You know, I come in Alcoholics Anonymous with a broken sense of intimacy and trust, and you're telling me to go up to somebody else, ask for help, and be honest with them? Like, with the sort of line of sponsorship I come from the sort of home group I come from, like, newcomers show up to my home group new, they're not leaving the room until they get a sponsor. You know, that's just the way I was, like, raised with the people I got sober with. Like, I don't know it any better. Like, because the truth is, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I really didn't know any better. Like, the guy who first took me through the work, I had such a lack of ability to hold myself to my word. I didn't even call him my sponsor until I finished the fifth step with him, because I needed to see myself get to that point and that experience before I was willing to, like, do anything. And like when I finally got to that fifth step and I got honest with somebody about my conduct and what I was doing, two things happened. A, I had an experience between starting my fourth step and finishing my fifth step that I set a sobriety date, March 12th, 2016. I haven't shaked it since. Second thing, I experienced something in the book called The Fifth Step Promises. I was feeling so high you couldn't even touch me, and I felt retarded. Because hundreds and hundreds of AA meetings, and no one ever told me to get that you go through the 12 steps to get relief. Like, I had no idea why we did them here, but that, like, I had experienced the fifth step promises, not knowing there were fifth step promises. And at that point, I was sold. You know, going back to that idea, faith is a result of results. I had finally taken an action, I got a result, so I know if I take that same action again, I'll get that same result, up until that point of the work. And, I was sold, man, and I started going through this process, and I was running around sponsoring kids, but, you know, the two things I wanted to talk about again, just the time frames that the Big Book uses, the recommended speed of and pace of working the 12 steps, the vocabulary used is next, promptly, we waste no time. First opportunity, an hour, we don't delay. Promptly, at once, immediately, at once, immediately, immediately, quickly, vigorously, all throughout the day. Like that was my experience. Like, I done a third step prayer with my sponsor after being asked some questions that are outlined in this book. I got on my knees and said a third step prayer, gave me direction for a fourth step. My first fourth step took like an hour to write. You know, I was like, I was whacked. I was like drinking nonstop. I was going days without sleep from other stuff I was taking. And I was in a psychosis, but I had an experience. You know, I at least saw by following the direction in this Big Book from writing that inventory is that I'm not a victim. You know, all those times I played a violin in front of the judge or the counselor or the DIFAS counselor, you know, all of you don't, what if you came from my household? Like, I saw enough truth in that inventory that it was all a lie. And I read off that inventory with that sponsor and experience. And I was just at it, man. And honestly, like, how I kind of stumbled into sponsorship against my doing because, like, I have no experience with, like, sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, just white-knuckling it with just fellowship. Like, I was, like, I'm 60 days sober. I was talking about writing inventory and making a mess. Like, that's all I know. And around the time I had 90 days to, like, a year, not a year, 90 days to, like, 4 months, a kid came up to me and was like, hey, you keep talking about this work, you know, why don't you take me through this process? And I straight up like told him no because I had 90 days sober. I thought I was going to kill him. You know, and he told me to, I told him to go back to the AA meeting and find somebody who'd been through the work with time and no one in the room had time and or been through the work. And I started sponsoring guys at 90 days. And, I eventually actually got like a real Big Book sponsor at some point. You know, I got a guy who's helped me through the work outlined in the Big Book strictly. I'll break his anonymity. His name's David Robinson. And part of the process of going through the work with him, he would give me a whole lot of selected literature to read. I probably listened to, like, even recently, like 10 or 15 audio tapes that he dished out to me. And one of them he used to always quote all the time is a passage from the Tao Te Ching. And I just wanted to read this real quick, just because it's relevant to what I'm about to get into. A good traveler has no fixed plans, and is no tent upon arriving. A good artist lets his intuition lead him wherever he wants. A good scientist has freed himself of concepts, and keeps his mind open to what is. Thus the master is available to all people, and doesn't reject anyone. He is ready to use all situations and doesn't waste anything. This is called embodying the light. What is a good man but a bad man's teacher? What is a bad man but a good man's job? If you don't understand this, you will get lost. However intelligent you are, it is a great secret. And what I've experienced in the last 7 years when it's come, or 6 years, I guess, from relative to when I was talking about, when it's come to sponsorship, is that I've learned more about myself and the others around me through sponsoring others than any sort of like therapy I've gone into or any sort of like teaching or education. I've come to appreciate I guess my brothers and sisters way more through the altruism that is described in Alcoholics Anonymous and through the 12th step than anything else. My sponsor also used to read a poem all the time that was written by Martin Luther King Jr. I think I read it or I talked about it in the first week I was here. I sought my soul, but my soul I cannot see. I sought my God, but my God eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. And I also said this as well a couple weeks ago. Because what I really experienced working with David was... I was promised when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous is that when I come into AA, Alcoholics Anonymous was going to love me until I can learn how to love myself. What I've experienced up until this point is that Alcoholics Anonymous loved me long enough to where I can learn how to love other people. And it's been through the fellowship, it's been through my sponsees, through my sponsor, it's been through the human race that I find the God of my understanding and be able to like connect all the dots. It's crazy, like, it's crazy the people that God has put into my life in the last 6 or 7 years, you know, that have totally changed my life. In the West Coast, they talk about this concept of, like, seconds and inches, right? You know, and how the margin between Rolling Hazard getting with Ebby when Ebby was in court and when... Ebby approached Bill and talked about spiritual disciplines in the Oxford group. And when Bill approached Bob, and Bob finally got sober, then he went down to Atlantic City and then got drunk again. And then Bob came back and then had one last drink before surgery and came home and he made all his amends. Like the literal margin for this fellowship to have been created, but for us to even be here right now, to even let alone our individual stories and the margin of error from us being here right now, for each and every one of us being somewhere else or dead, is literally by a margin of seconds and inches. And like, even for example, like I'd gone through a breakup recently with somebody I got sober with, somebody I've known for years, for like 4 or 5 years. We got into a relationship. It was pretty intense. We broke up. It got complicated. A lot of drama. I had to cut a lot of people off. But, you know, at that point in my life, like I'd say like 8 months ago or a year ago, like I had began exploring like Al-Anon and ACOA and all these other fellowships with all these other spiritual solutions, but I felt like I kept hitting a roadblock even after going through the 12 steps in those fellowships. I sought therapy, I sought all these outside help, and I just kept hitting a roadblock. And all my sponsor told me to do was just throw myself into working with others. Like, I had sponsees, but really double down and work with, like, sponsees, and then work with more sponsees, and work with even more sponsees. And at one point, something snapped, and I finally started doing that. You know, actually, there's a... If you ever listen to speaker tapes on YouTube, my great-grand sponsor Bob Darrell talks about his tape where he was trying to work things out with his wife at the time, his wife, and his wife was being really difficult and really pushing him away, and then he tried to go to counseling, and he was sponsoring guys and working a program and doing all these things to try to make the marriage work, and it just ended up not working out. And what ended up happening is, it turned out one of Bob's sponsees was having an affair with his wife, and as soon as they broke off the marriage, she ended up moving in with him. But he threw himself into working with others, and what ended up happening was that he started sponsoring a lot of guys who were going through divorce, and was able to take his mind and put it on other people's. And what ended up happening is both his wife and that sponsee of his, they both ended up going out, but he's still very close with both of them. In fact, he still sponsors that guy today. And you can listen to his tapes about how that played out in that process. But what I experienced from my happening with going through my breakup is that, how do I put it? So, my ex had a lot of baggage and had a lot to talk about. And when I started throwing myself with working with others, I ended up sponsoring a lot of men who ended up prostituting themselves over the years and had a lot of trauma and, PTSD. And I got to hear a lot of inventory of men who'd, been through a lot of the things that my ex had experienced over the years when she was drinking and drugging. And I got a lot of perspective about, and a lot of compassion and empathy and love for her and the people around her. Because, I heard it from, the dog's mouth. I got to see perspective and the pain and hurt from somebody, and not only that, when it comes to a sponsee, with a sponsee, you're always going to love your sponsees, right? And that's kind of the weird thing with Alcoholics Anonymous is that it's really easy to have love and empathy and care and kindness to a newcomer, because we've all been there. We've all had a day one. So it's really easy to show love and empathy and support for that newcomer, but then to translate that to a crusty old timer who's bashing you for everything that's coming out of your mouth, or somebody you resent and actually hurted you. Now, that's the magic trick. And that's actually what I experienced when I was working with David Robinson. That's how I actually overcame that resentment towards my ex, was ironically through sponsoring others. But when I started working with my first big book sponsor, he was going to speak out in New York City at the 97th Street Workshop out in Manhattan. And I had to go from work in Cranford to meet him in Summit to go drive into the city. But I get a call from the Springfield Police Department, and they're like, "Hey, we got this guy here who's drunk. We're gonna throw him in lockup if you don't pick him up." And for starters, I was like, "How did you get my number?" And it turned out I'd gotten this number from this old timer who had relapsed, who had gone to the liquor store in Springfield, got drunk, fell asleep in his car while his car was on, so he was getting a DUI. And if he wasn't going to get picked up that night, they were going to put him in Union County, which is Texas County or whatever now. But I ended up picking him up and bringing him along on the speaking commitment when he was drunk. And he was throwing up out of my sponsor's BMW. And he was like, "Where did you find this guy?" And I told him, Springfield Police Department called me. What was I supposed to do? He's gonna... I think he's died.
Yeah.
But... that dies quick. But I told him, "What am I supposed to do? This guy was gonna go to jail otherwise." And my sponsor told me that love and compassion I have for that newcomer was going to allow me to have a wonderful, full life. But what my sponsor told me at that point is that I needed to translate that same love and empathy I had for that newcomer that I had for that old-timer that I had in Alcoholics Anonymous resentment towards. and what that looked like for me when I was a year sober. Like, I was going into clubhouses and being told to leave my big book outside of the clubhouse. I was being told I was going to get drunk for quoting the promises in the AA meetings I was going to. Like, I was being told some really horrendous stuff, but my sponsor literally gave me no excuse to have any ill will towards any of these people I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous with. It literally got to the point where when I really began to have an experience in working the program and making amends, my sponsor, other people were giving me compliments about my sponsor because they saw so much of a change in me. And to kind of wrap that story home with being ill-willed to the newcomer, I mean the old-timer, my sponsor had me meet him at meetings. This was like pre-pandemic. Back in 2018, he had me meet him at meetings throughout the state of New Jersey throughout the week. His home group, which was my home group, but then he would make me meet him at a 7:30 a.m. meeting out in Union, New Jersey at Kane College. And then he would have me meet him at a clubhouse, the Al-Anon Clubhouse in Newark at 9 a.m. And like, I would drive with him to Newark at 9 a.m. and we'd pull up, and this is like Newark. Like, there were like prostitutes hanging out right out of the clubhouse. Like, this is like not a nice place, but he forced me to go to those meetings and sit through that meeting and listen to people talk about being homeless. People nodding out during the meeting who were coming off the streets. People talking about being shot at. And I did this for months. And at one point, this guy named Tom started coming to the meeting. And me and Tom went at it a couple times at some clubhouses. We went back and forth. But I got to meet this guy at this meeting. And my sponsor also made me put him on my eighth step. So I owed him a mint, so it worked out. But what ended up happening from that was I got to hear Tom share about his experiences with his life and where he's been and what he's done away from his fellowship. And away from people that are friends with him, that he knows he BS's with and tries to impress. And I got really to hear Tom share about his life stuff, how he's a widow and stuff like that. And I even went up to him and was like, dude, where's this all been when you were chair at this other clubhouse? Like, I'm hearing stuff that, like, totally changing my opinion of him. And I ended up making amends to him, and I ended up staying good friends with him to the point where I celebrated 5 years. He gave me my 5-year coin. Like, he went from being this guy I couldn't even sit in the same room with him to being actually a pretty good friend. So there's only two other things I really want to talk about tonight. I want to stay with working with others just a little bit longer, but there's just a little bit I want to read. Well, I'll just touch on the point, and then I'll go. I'll just talk, read about the last part I want to talk about. So, over and over again, Bill Wilson really hits home this idea of this program and these principles are all meant to be a design for living. Like, these are all things that I'm supposed to apply to my life and be able to do in my life to where I get to go out there and live a life. You know, the real miracle that's occurred for me as a result of working this program these last 7 years is that I get to live a relatively normal life for a 20-some-year-old. Nothing glitz, glamour, nothing too fantastic. It's just, my life's really no different than somebody in my age, you know, with my education and my work ethic. You know, and honestly, that's pretty good for somebody that was coming off the streets and was being chased by the cops and, you know, being shot at and all the other crazy stuff I was being involved in back in the day. Like, that doesn't actually happen for people like me. But there's this concept I talk about with my sponsees which is the most valuable commodity in Alcoholics Anonymous's experience. Because this whole thing is just drunks talking and sharing their experience, strength, and hope with other drunks, right? So, like, a key factor in that is actually, like, experience in living life. And not necessarily, like, living life well. Like, my sponsor used to quote Bill Wilson all the time and talks when Bill Wilson talks about, in this Grapevine article, that Alcoholics Anonymous is not actually, after all, a personal success story. It's instead the story of our colossal human failures, diverted by the happiest kind of usefulness, by the divine alchemy, the living grace of God. You know, I'm not here because, like, I know the book and, you know, I haven't worked the steps the way I do because it necessarily feels good all the time and because I listen to my sponsor well. It's because I'm a total F-up and I've constantly blown my life up time and time again. And it's through those colossal human failures and that pain that comes from that, I've been driven to seek stronger sponsorship over the years. Sponsorship that holds me accountable, that's deeper into the book and deeper into service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And from that, I've been able to tap into this power for the last 7 years, and I haven't changed my sobriety day since. You know? It kind of has worked out that way. And the only reason we consider time to be more valuable than experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I do find time is more valuable than experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, is because the longer that you live in Alcoholics Anonymous, you stay sober and you live, the more time you have to actually experience things. So, like, you know, when even going through these chapters with, like, the wives and the family afterwards and stuff like that, like, I really drive home this idea with my sponsees of, like, living life. You know, like, if my sponsees are dating, I question their motives, like, why they're dating, how they're dating, you know, like, what's up with that? And even if my sponsees are celibate and they're just worried about their personal stuff right now, I ask them, why are they celibate? You know, why are you chosen to move that way? Why aren't you trying to get out there? Why aren't you trying to live life? You know, it's because if we're not applying these principles and effectively or at all in general in our daily lives, and we're not out there trying to live lives, how effective are we really being in Alcoholics Anonymous, being like these vessels of like these spiritual principles? And how effective are we really going to be in Alcoholics Anonymous? Like, if all I've done for 20 years is spend, you know, every waking moment that I can in church basements, not living life, hiding from the realities of the world, like, how effective am I really going to be at sponsorship when a sponsee comes to me with some sort of problem or brings up some specific piece of inventory that makes me uniquely qualified to talk to them about experiences like that, or in situations that make me uniquely qualified to talk about particular amends that I've had to go out and make, or stuff like that, or things I share in my story when I get behind the podium and I get to express details about myself that make me uniquely qualified to help another person. So I just want to kind of finish up just talking about a vision for you and kind of get some last thoughts before I close up my 3 weeks here. So I'm on page 163. Actually, I'm going to start at 162. Last sentence, thus we grow. Thus we grow, and so can you. Though you be but one man with this book in your hand, we believe and hope it contains all you will need to begin. We know what you are thinking. You are saying to yourself, I'm jittery and alone. I couldn't do that. But you can. Forget that you have just now tapped a source of power much greater than yourself to duplicate with such backing what we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. We know of an AA member who was living in a large community. He had lived there but a few weeks when he found that the place probably contained more alcoholics per square mile than any city in the country. This was only a few days ago at this writing. The authorities were much concerned. He got in touch with a prominent psychiatrist who undertaken certain responsibilities for mental health of the community. The doctor proved to be able and exceedingly anxious to adopt any workable method of handling the situation, so he inquired, "What did our friend have on the ball?" Our friend proceeded to tell him, and with such good effect, that doctor agreed to test among his patients a certain other alcoholics from the clinic which he attends. Arrangements were also made with the chief psychiatrist of a large public hospital to select still others the stream of misery which flows through that institution. So a fellow worker will soon have friends galore. Some of them may sink, perhaps never to get up. But if our experience is a critician, more than half of those approached will become fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. When a few men in the city have found themselves and have discovered the joy of helping others to face life again, there will be no stopping until everyone is in that town has had his opportunity to recover, if he can and will. Still, you may say, "Well, I will not have any benefit of contact with you who writes this book." We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers come when your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand Him, God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely in what you can find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we surely meet some of us who treasure the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. When I was originally speaking today, I began talking about seasons and cycles and coming and going, ups and downs and stuff like that. And when I originally started speaking at this meeting, I was talking about this idea of whether Alcoholics Anonymous will be here, you know, 10, 20, 30 years or not. I think one of the most appreciative moments I've enjoyed in sobriety was actually one not necessarily in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was actually watching a movie with some roommates of mine that I was living with when I was in early sobriety. It was of the original, it was the 7th Star Wars movie, or like the 8th one, you know, and there was just a specific scene that I always remember, because a lot of the movie was about the, you know, sacred text of the Jedi, and at one of the most climactic scenes, they destroy all the sacred text of the Jedi, and they pretty much talk about how she already knows everything that those books have to say. And, you know, I can't say whether Alcoholics Anonymous is going to be here 10 years or not. The truth is that, you know, there was the Washingtonians that came back in the 1800s, you know, a group of alcoholics that started helping one another, and they got dismantled when they stopped having a clear-cut, unified direction to go in. And I think as long as we do our best as a fellowship to kind of preserve unity amongst one another by continuing to carry this message and study this message, I think something that resembles this message is going to be here. I'm going to end it with this. I actually want to end it with this little reading from a pamphlet in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with the Members Eye View in Alcoholics Anonymous. No? So at the end of this pamphlet, it's a piece of CPC literature of an alcoholic describing AA to non-alcoholic professionals. And at the end of the pamphlet, it actually has a little story from Scripture. And what is it? It's a story of John the Baptist. And he describes a little bit of an experience he had with Alcoholics Anonymous by reading the story of John the Baptist. And it talks about after Jesus had finished instructing his 12 disciples, he went out from there to teach and preach in the town of Galilee. When John, who was imprisoned, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask him, "Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect somebody else?" Jesus replied, "Go back and report to John what you hear and what you see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead raised, and the gospel is proclaimed unto the poor." And it goes on to talk about in this pamphlet when he talks about this little brief piece of scripture that the gospel translated into Hebrew actually is defined as the good news. And when they talk about the dead in this piece of scripture, they're not necessarily talking about the dead physically, they're talking about the dead in spirit. So, and it talks about in that piece of pamphlet, you know, if my reporting does any justice to you guys, you know, I've been able to see in the last couple of years that the blind see, the deaf hear, lepers cleansed, and, you know, in our darkest night, in our longest day, the good news is proclaimed to the ones that want it. You know, and I want to thank Mark for allowing me to speak here again, and thank you for letting me share, guys.